Trump minus Europe and Trump plus North Korea. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. President Donald Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un are in Singapore preparing to meet on Tuesday this evening in the U.S. time zones. Marketplace's Jennifer Pack is there.
More than 2,000 journalists from around the world have descended on this tiny island to cover the event. Security has been stepped up around the meeting venue and the hotels where the leaders are staying. Singapore says it will spend $15 million to stage the event, but adds it is worth the price for regional security. The U.S. says its goal is to get North Korea to commit to a complete denuclearization plan. North Korea wants, among other things, economic sanctions to be lifted.
This morning, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that sanctions will, quote, remain until North Korea completely and verifiably eliminates its mass destruction programs. Now to the transatlantic political and economic relationship. After the rhetorical line of tornadoes that swept through the end of the Group of Seven summit this weekend, you heard President Trump refused to sign the agreed-upon summit deal after Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau complained of U.S. steel and aluminum tariffs at a news conference. Boy, was the president mad. Ian Bremmer is founder of the political risk consultancy The Eurasia Group. He said this is the moment U.S., Europe, and Canada fell out, despite economic consequences.
The G7 summit this weekend was a geopolitical equivalent of Trump firing Comey. It wasn't in his interest, but my God, it felt really good at the moment that he did it. It was petulant. It was Trump wanting to lash out at the American allies because he was hurt and he was angry and he felt like they didn't like him and they weren't doing what he demanded. And as a consequence, he did a lot of damage to those relationships that have taken decades to build up, but they're a lot easier to hurt. And a lot of ways that Trump would like to get his own foreign policy outcomes more towards his liking over time are going to be harder because these are people, these are relationships you have to cultivate, and he's actively spiked them.
But Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau, was he being a jerk?
No, he wasn't at all. But he was being pretty tough-minded about being considered a national security threat and about the trade relationship with the United States, that he would hit back on tariffs. Trump has said that the reason you need America first is because all these other countries automatically are going to do the same thing for themselves. So he should have, in principle, expected it from another leader, but as soon as he got on that plane, he needed to get the last word in. It was not okay for him to leave early and for others to be setting the agenda.
Ian Bremmer, founder of the Eurasia Group, thank you so much.
David, good to talk to you.
Checking my live market screens, the FTSE Stock Index in London is up 0.9%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up slightly. The euro up, dollar down. Euro's at $1.17.8 at the moment. Not everyone gets a chance to study the economy in school. Anyway, who doesn't need a brush up? Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that we hope is smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy. And that, we think, is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors. Thank you. Now, it became more than a meme and nearly attained the status of a worldview that the future of work in America was Uber style, involving armies of independent contractors knitting a string of gigs together into a work life. Now, the last time the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics counted what are called contingent workers was way back in 2005. Well, they've just counted again. And you sitting down? Workers in non-traditional work arrangements was 10.7% 12 years ago and is less now, 10.1%.
I tried not to have the expression, I told you so, but I have been saying this for several years.
Larry Michel is a distinguished fellow and economist at the Economic Policy Institute, who's long said that the so-called gig economy, with its relatively low wages and hours per week, is not the deal people say it is.
There's been a lot of written, a lot of clicks have been earned by the media in reporting about everyone's going to be a freelancer, but it's never really been true. And the fact is that, 93% of all employment are people who have W-2 payroll jobs. Now, there is a phenomena of people in the online world and apps like Uber drivers who are supplementing their main jobs by doing things that are online and doing some independent contracting. But the discussions tend to be about the evolving nature of work and the future of work And in my view, if you're focused on those issues, then you need to be focused on how are people earning their living? What's their main job? And for that, these new BLS data are the gold standard.
All right. So if most of us are still employed and get W-2, does that mean that the jobs that we have are somehow better, less transient, less cobbled together from all these little gig economy jobs?
You know, I think once we get past the hype on freelancing and gig work, we should be able to focus on the main crisis of the moment and of the last four decades, which is wage stagnation and the erosion of job quality and the fact that fewer people have benefits. Independent contractors, even the small share that there is, roughly 7%, have their own challenges in terms of getting benefits, getting paid for work that they've done. There's issues there. But there are many other types of workers in the economy that also have challenges. You know, retail workers that don't have control over their scheduling. So we have a major crisis of the erosion of job quality over the last four decades. That is the economic issue that must be addressed. And those who are in alternative work arrangements are part of that mosaic.
Economist Larry Michel is at the Economic Policy Institute. Larry, thank you for this.
Well, thank you for calling.
Now back to Marketplace's Jennifer Pack in Singapore, who's been looking at some of the businesses cashing in on the summit tonight, tomorrow, between the leaders of the U.S. and North Korea.
Over the weekend, more than 1,000 people in Singapore lined up for hours just to see two men who resembled President Trump and Kim Jong-un. And then they paid $11 to take selfies with the duo. The idea came from a startup called Vibes. Its co-founder is Wei Qingjin.
And it's actually really funny, right? Because these are not actually the real Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un, but people are just so excited to be able to take a picture with them.
Closer to where the real leaders are staying, the Royal Plaza on Scotts Hotel created a Trump Kim burger, a kimchi chicken patty for $9. They've been selling more than 100 a day.
All right, that's Marketplace's Jennifer Pack in Singapore for the big North Korea-U.S. meeting. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's a Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.